This podcast was recorded in October 2016, when we were thinking a lot about supervision.
Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity, so that people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jo. Last podcast, we talked about our relationships at work and the types of support that we can get in the workplace. And really, one of those things that we talked about in that podcast was about supervision. So we thought we'd talk a little bit more about that, you know, what good supervision looks like, how do you ensure you get it, how do you understand the role that oversight plays in supervision, and then things like, you know, practice supervisors and the knowledge and skills, things that are around to help us talk well about what we need from supervision.
Yeah, and when we were preparing for this, and people might be surprised to find that we do actually prepare, we talked a bit about those areas, and my concern was that we wouldn't be saying anything really useful if we didn't really try and get to the practicalities and the kind of real sense of it and the real issues about how to go about having supervision, because there's lots and lots and lots of information about supervision being important, and we should all do it, and you know, you should have it every month, and it should be really good, and it should be from social work and all this kind of stuff, but people aren't consistently getting good supervision that really helps them, so I think we do have to dig a bit deeper than just saying yeah, supervision's important, and really yeah. Try and understand how it's important and what good really looks like, because it doesn't look like just sitting in a room with someone once a month.
Definitely not. I actually, first of all, I'm always interested in how much emphasis we put on supervision as the answer for everything. Every time there's a serious case review, every time something goes wrong in an organisation, when there's inadequate inspections, supervision is always one of the things that's highlighted. And, of course, the question is, well, why? What is it that we expect to get out of it? And I think that supervision is good supervision to me looks like how the person feels and behaves afterwards. So good supervision is very containing. And by that I mean people come in anxious, they come in feeling like they can't quite do things, they come in confused and worried. And the supervision experience actually settles them, allows them to use their brain, I guess, and stop having those emotions jarring and jingling at them. So you should walk out of a good supervision session feeling a whole heap better than when you came in. I think that's one of the really important things about it.
Yeah, you'd want it to actually help you make some progress, wouldn't you? And that's partly in the area of resilience. Partly in the area of confidence and capability. So it is about your ability to be a good social worker and also your well-being, both of those areas. And really, you can't be a good social worker without a level of well-being yourself. So the things that really interest me are, there's still research that shows that people don't always get supervision, but there's also evidence, some of it people that we talk to in training sessions, that people are not getting supervision that makes them feel like they're making progress, and there's a number of factors around that, I think, aren't there? There's partly, I think, the confidence and capabilities of both the supervisee and the supervisor. There's quite a lot of it that's around the context in the organization, which might be the expectations the organization has, or the level of stress or distress in the organisation, the level of change, other things that are going on. And there's also, I think, the kind of feeling of being driven by national developments. So I suppose poor supervision probably looks like both the supervisor and the supervisee feeling a bit out of control and going into the session not really having a handle on what they want to get out of it.
So it's that kind of the expectations from the session are being, they feel like they're being put on them from above without them being really understood. and that neither of the parties that are involved in it have talked about their expectations. And we know that unmet expectations are one of the biggest causes of all fallout, really, and also many divorces. And if you think about supervisee-supervisor relationship, I think it's another thing that you know, what good supervision looks like. Well, good supervision has real clarity around expectations. Why are we here? What do we want to get out of it? How can we be helped most? How can we be challenged well? How can we challenge other decisions that are made, other national expectations in a way that's helpful? So how can we talk to each other about what needs to change and improve, and all those kind of ground rules that need to be set out at the beginning of any good relationship. So I think there's something in good supervision about a real clarity around expectations. What is supervision trying to achieve in this case?
Yeah, and I think the if you thought about it from a blank piece of paper, if you had two people who were quite a lot on, who were going to give an hour of their time to each other, then if they had a really open conversation about what would be the most useful use of that hour, it might be different from time to time. Yeah, might be this time, actually, what I need to do is talk about this thing that's frustrating me. Next time, I need practical help with this particular task. Next time, actually, I just need to offload or, you know. But instead, we tend to have a set agenda and a set of tasks to get through. That don't allow for that sort of flexibility and agreement of what's the best use of the time. And I think it's probably a bit unhelpful to suggest that, you know, any supervisor and supervisee could come up with whatever they wanted to do with the session. And you wouldn't necessarily want to reinvent the wheel for every single supervisory relationship. There's some really good models of supervision out there, like the Morrison 4x4x4 one, which has all the elements of supervision that you need to think about: management, reflection, support, mediation, development. And those kind of models allow you to think about all the things that you would be hopefully trying to do within that hour or that hour and a half or that 2 hours. But I think there is a need to be flexible about which things you emphasise depending on what happens to be going on for the person at the time. And I had a really good workshop with some supervisors in one of the London boroughs, and one of their very experienced supervisors said that the first question to ask your supervisee is, so what's going on with you at the moment? What's happening? Because from that you can figure out what the agenda needs to look like. Whereas if you just go in with, right, here's the agenda,
It's about where you put things, isn't it? Because I'm thinking from, you know, with my children's services hat on, one of the things that supervisors will often say is, we need to go through every case, or we need to check that all the staff visits are done, or we need to do this. And for me, some of those things can be done outside of supervision and then just reflected back in the supervision. I've had a look at your caseload and I've noticed that there isn't any recording about visits for these children. Do you want to tell me a bit about that? And it's also about the timing of when that's done. Because if you leap into that to start with, all that, right, let's get all the business out of the way first, I think that that can create a real barrier. It can put the supervisee on the back foot so that they're explaining and justifying and kind of protecting themselves. And then that time can be quickly taken up. Whereas the question that your supervisor was saying, which is, how are you doing today? How have things been for you? You know, what are you bringing into the room? Pays much more attention to how the person's functioning. So it puts that support and that kind of acknowledgement of the person right up at the front. And in a lot of agendas, you'll see the jobs that the organisation dictates have to be done, which all of which are important, right at the very front. So sometimes it's about moving things around.
Yeah, and I think to be kind of practical about this, that will be a conversation hopefully between a supervisor and a supervisee around what's the best way of approaching supervision in that relationship, and what are the things that you want to get out of the session, with an awareness that there's some expectations from the organisation and from your profession actually about the things that you need to have oversight of, you know, that you need to check in on every month or so, and that there will need to be some compromise probably about how you spend the time. I think the difficulty often seems to be having that conversation, so being able to ask for good supervision, and actually for both supervisors and supervisees, if they're not feeling enabled to do good supervision within the organisational demands or context, being able to take that up with more senior people in the organisation.
Yeah, there's something there about reasonableness of expectations, isn't there? That actually, as adults working in a functional environment, we should be able to reasonably expect that there will be a positive response to evidence that we bring that something's not working, that there are things getting in the way of us doing our job well. One of those things is this 16-page form. These are the reasons why. This is, you know, and being able to demonstrate the barriers and being able to expect a reasonable response back. If we can show that it's not helpful, remembering that good supervision helps people feel more in control, but it also helps them to go out and carry out their tasks in a more focused and confident way, you know, so and managers feel like they've got a good grip on the issues that their team are facing. Supervision has to have that element of helping managers understand what you're facing day to day, because I can't see how managers will know otherwise.
Yeah, and I think the bringing it always back to what's going to help me be good at my job, you know, what's going to help me be useful to the people that we're trying to serve, is really important, because otherwise it can seem like you're just asking for the luxury of good supervision rather than you're asking for the essential thing that is good supervision, because we know from lots of research that it does help people to feel more resilient, it does help people to feel more motivated, does help people to feel more supported in their job. There's indicators that it helps with decision making, and good judgment, so you can bring that evidence to bear as well, can't you? You can be asking for this on the basis that we've got a certain amount of knowledge that supervision is worth doing and worth doing well. And it certainly isn't worth doing poorly. There's an awful lot of time put into supervision that might even be counterproductive.
I think that's right. Doing it for its own sake, when there's no relational connection, there's no management oversight, and there's no emotional containment, would feel, I think, very kind of destructive, really. And like, I've got to have supervision now, you know, and we do hear those stories about people who really dread supervision. You know, we're really, what we're saying in our field is that we think robust relational supervision that gives good oversight of decision making and helps people to clarify their task is one of the best ways to help keep people safe and keep children, families and adults safe in the field. And if that's what we believe, then actually good supervision is absolutely not a luxury.
Yeah, and I'd really like to see a lot more evidence coming out of practice of good supervision. There is a really helpful evidence overview that Social Care Institute of Excellence did a few years ago about the effectiveness of supervision. I know you've been doing work with Research in Practice around how reflective supervision helps people, but really the evidence of supervision being useful to practitioners is held by practitioners, isn't it?
It is, and with the change project we've been doing, the people who've been involved in that have been really generous with their time. But when we've made it wider and we've asked other people to come in and help give us some evidence, it's been very hard to get people to find that time to actually give us what they're holding in their head around supervision. So we continue to make a lot of a little sometimes, because a little's what we get.
Yeah, and I think people who move from one local authority to another quite often bring that good information with them, either about ways that supervision's not worked well because of the process or the culture of the organisation, whatever, or ways that it has worked well. And you can find that a good supervisor moving from one place to another can have a real impact on the way things are done. The other thing that I wanted to talk about as being a really useful thing for people is the kind of guidance around good supervision. So things like the standards for employers of social workers that came out of the Social Work Task Force, which does say social workers should get supervision from a social worker. There is quite a lot of interdisciplinary supervision, and that's not necessarily a problem, but you still need to have access to that kind of clinical support from a social worker. And BASWA has recently done some work around, if you're in an integrated team, the expectation that you should have of support as a social worker, and that includes supervision. And there's also the capabilities framework, which says what supervisors, people at the advanced level, would be able to offer. And also the knowledge and skill statements, and we now have for practice supervisors for children and families, but I think there's going to be some work in adults as well. And all of those are kind of helpful benchmarks to take to your organisation, or to get together with other social workers and say, actually, this is what we'd ideally be hoping for. Not in a really critical way, in terms of this isn't good enough, or I demand or whatever, but actually saying, look, we've done all this work as a profession to show what's useful. How can we replicate that kind of experience here?
And it's that audit. We're all expected to audit nowadays. We're all expected to invite critical challenge, and it should be the same with supervision. You should be able to talk about what's working well and why. You should be able to talk about what's left to achieve and why. And you should be able to talk about how you're going to actually achieve that. And that should be seen as helpful, because the thing that strikes me all the time is how, when the systems fail, when the organisations fail, when there's terrible things that happen, there's always an emphasis on supervision. Supervision wasn't received, supervision was received, but there was none of this, or there was, and so there's a real kind of idea, isn't there, that supervision is what keeps us safe in our practice, through the fact that there's meant to be good scrutiny and good challenge, and it's meant to be helpful for us. I was talking to a group of practitioners, and I was saying to them, how long since any of you have had your writing, what you've been writing, what you've been doing, your assessment work, sent back to you? And if it's been a really long time, what's your manager doing? Because actually, are you really that good that you don't need any feedback, any challenge, that there's nothing that can be changed? Because actually you should want challenge. I think you should want challenge in this field.
Yeah, and it would be really helpful to know if, hopefully it is, that if supervision is being reviewed. Certainly that relationship ideally would be reviewed at appraisal. I've had some very good managers in my time who've been really up for finding out for me how the relationship's working, and being really honest about how it's working from their point of view at appraisal time, and seeing it as a, not about my performance only, but about my performance within that relationship. And I think if in an ideal world, that's, we'd be modelling that as well within our organisations, wouldn't we, that people leading from the top, people would be open to feedback about how they're supporting their staff, how those relationships are working, so that they can improve. And it'd be discouraging to think that people can have month after month after month of unhelpful supervision and not feel able to say anything about it, and it not really be realised. So I think probably the first step is going to be those honest conversations, and it might be that you need to seek support for that, because it is difficult to raise concerns or start that conversation with someone who's perceived as more powerful than you. And actually is in some ways more powerful.
Okay, does that feel like a natural place to end?
And I think the things that that I'd want people to go away thinking about is, how is my supervision working, and does it feel like progress? And if it doesn't, what's my first step to getting the support to change it?
Unless we know of another way, Is there another mechanism or another tool out there that would replace supervision and allow us to feel contained, allow us to practice thinking relationships, allow us to think our way through very strong interpersonal problems as well?
Yeah, and I think as an immediate first step, you'd seek other people to have those kind of relationships with, and maybe through them you would gain sufficient support and confidence to challenge the supervisory arrangement that you've got.
Yep.
Okay, thanks very much, Jo.
Thank you, Jo.